യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുതസ്തുന്നന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈഃ വേദൈ സാംഗപദക്രമോപനിഷദൈഃ ഗായന്തി യം സാമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിതദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസ്സുരാസുരഗണാഃ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. Today we are going to discuss the 22nd verse of the second chapter. It's a very, very famous verse, not only from a philosophical point of view, but also from real life point of view. The verse is this: Vasam Shijirnani Yathavikaya നവാനി ഗൃഹ്ണാതി നരോപരാണി തഥാ ശരീരാണി വിഹായ ജീർണാനി അന്യാനി സംയാതി നവാനി ദേഹി. As the embodied person, that normal human being, throws away a worn out dress, clothes, and puts on a new dress, similarly an individual's jiva, individual self, will discard old worn out bodies and adopt new ones. This is the literal meaning. So this verse expounds the whole philosophy of life and also the philosophy of death, because without a proper understanding of the meaning of death, we cannot really understand the meaning of life. Because life and death are interrelated. One of the most profound fears, one of the scariest things in human life is this non-certain guaranteed reality, which we want to avoid, which we want to run away from, which we want to forget, want to postpone, but can never really avoid. So Vedanta gives a very unique philosophy of the whole concept and psychology of life and death. So in short, it tells you that this life is not just one chance. It is a series. And Bhagavad Gita, I'm going to expound this verse very elaborately, because this is one of the most profound verses in the whole text of 700 verses, which actually deals with the whole meaning of human existence, life and actions, our fears, our temptations, our uncertainties, all are described here. So what is death? The verse tells you, see, when you go to known storm, where there are well-known cloth merchants, cloth shops here, when you find your business dress is torn, you feel a need to throw away that and buy a new set of clothing. You are not afraid of that. It's not something scary. Like that, this human body is not something that is going to last long, which we all know very well intellectually. It is not unknown to anybody. But it is something that we want to forget. We do not want to encounter. And out of this unwillingness, fear to encounter the certain reality, all other problems arise. So Vedanta tells you, this body is like a cloth. It may last for 100 years if you eat GMO free organic food and live in very, very disciplined life, do exercise every day. Still maybe 100 years, not more. And these clothes have to be thrown away. Now the point is, when you throw away your clothes, it doesn't mean that you are going to remain naked for the rest of your existence. In fact, we already have new clothes ready before we throw away the old clothes. No civilized, intelligent man will wait for buying a new cloth. He won't wait till he throw away the old clothes. He doesn't do that. Similarly, and that's exactly what Vedanta tells you. Your cloth is already ready. It is already on your table, on your closet, as we may call. Before you take it to the trash can here on Wednesday evening, it's already ready. Now, this is a totally different interpretation and approach towards life from Abrahamic religions. That's one thing you have to remember. In fact, one central point of difference with regard to life between Abrahamic religious traditions and Vedanta or Hindu tradition, Buddhism, Jainism and so on, is this concept of continued existence, this idea of life reincarnating again and again, and the doctrine of karma. See, the doctrine of karma is not fatalism. Doctrine of karma is not fatalism. Rather, it is actually, it gives us an impetus to do our best. But at the same time, it gives us the good feeling, well, even if you do not succeed 100%, still there is nothing going to be lost. So, whatever we do in this life, do our best, all days will remain as a spiritual bank balance in our name, and when we are born again, all these good qualities we will inherit. We are born with a bag, two types of bags. One bag is something very useful. See, when you are born in this life, in this world, you are born with a bag. The bag is a collection of samskaras, vrittis, tendencies, attitudes, behavior patterns, very often not clearly expressed, but very forceful. Behind every tendency, behind every action, behind every attitude, there is something that we have brought with us when we are born, from previous life cycles. Even tendencies and impressions that you may have accumulated, let us say 1,000 years back, or 2,000 years back, you may express today, if there is an opportunity, an appropriate opportunity arises. And historians tell us that the old Greek mystery religions and even Christianity till the Council of Nicaea, that is 320 AD, before Christianity was made the national religion of Roman Empire by Constantine, who did mostly as a political strategy, then out of real conversion into the teachings of Jesus. In fact, historically, that's well known to everyone. Before that, even the early Christians also believed in the doctrine of karma and the doctrine of reincarnation, rebirth, which is an integral part of the old mystery religions of Greece. Well, I shall give just one flashback to those times. See, there's a very interesting incident mentioned in Plato's dialogues. You know, when Socrates was sentenced to commit suicide, to take his own life by drinking poison, one of his disciples, one of his an aged disciple, a Greek gentleman, one of the nobility, Crito, approached him and asked him, how do you want us to bury you? Then Socrates' reply was, for that you should first of all know who is the real I. Because you cannot really bury me, that's what he wanted to say. So what was going to be buried, the body of Socrates, is only a cloth that he was throwing away. So this was a part of the philosophy and also part of their culture and belief system. Now, I can give some very interesting expositions of this idea from Gita itself. If you go to the 6th chapter of Gita, there are some very interesting verses here. 6th chapter of Gita, if you take, if you have got a book with you, you can take 6th chapter. It is, let's say, 41st verse of the 6th chapter. Now, here, this is a response, an answer, but Lord Krishna gives to his disciple Arjuna. The disciple puts one question before Krishna, the teacher. And that question, I mean, I'm not going to discuss. In fact, I have already discussed many times on innumerable occasions that that question comes on the 37th verse. That is, Ayadi Sadhyo Pedo Yoga Charita Manasaka Aprapa Yoga Samsiddhim Kam Gadim Krishna Gechadi Kachinu Bhavi Brashta Chinna Brahmivanaschadi Apradishto Mahabahu Vimudho Brahmanapadi. Two verses. I shall give the essence. Then the question, this is it. The disciple, the student, is putting a question before Krishna, the teacher. Suppose you meditate, you pray, you read good books, you lead a very good life, and then before you feel you are fully accomplished, you are fully enlightened spiritually. Let us say life comes to an end. Does it mean that everything is over? You are going to hell, or your life is going to be in vain because there was a deviation in your life, or you perhaps didn't fully succeed in your spiritual practices? Lord Krishna's answer is contained in a number of verses from 40th verse onwards. Now, I'm not going to deal with those verses. In the 41st verse, Lord Krishna says, people who have done a lot of good deeds in this life, you have prayed, you have meditated, you have donated checks to help people suffering from earthquakes, tsunamis, or innumerable other tragedies. Some noble deeds you have done without any selfish motive. Or even if you have done some good actions without, well, let's say, even with selfish motive, if you have done some good actions, that also will be a helpful tool that will create a spiritual bank balance in your name. And what happens when you are born again? You will be born in a good family where you will get an opportunity to continue your spiritual practice. So Lord Krishna says, Partha naiveha namutra vinasastasya vidyade nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgadim tata gacchadi. This is the 40th verse, which means Lord Krishna, the teacher, is telling the disciple, look here, you are not going to perish. The good actions you have done are not going to perish. They are not going to be in vain. Because any person who does something good, good thoughts, good ideas, good impulses, even a desire to do good things, will produce a positive impulse, a positive effect on our mental system. That's the main difference between physical actions and mental actions. When you think of helping a person, and for some reason you are not going to help him, the person is not going to get your help at the physical level. But you are benefited. How? Because that good impulse, that good thought, that good attitude will do a lot of good for you. If it is a sincere desire to do something good for others, even if we are not physically able to do that action. So mind will generate a spiritual bank balance. When you think a good thought, when you read a good book, and with a sense of degree of sincerity, when you develop a good attitude, that will have a refining effect, a purifying effect on the mental system. Now, Lord Krishna says, such people who may have done a lot of good actions in this life, have prayed a lot of number of times, or may have done some good help to others. There are many wonderfully spiritual people who never go to temples or churches or synagogues or places of worship. There are many outstanding spiritual people who may be spiritual in their attitude. They won't block others from going to churches and temples, though they themselves may not be able to go. Gandhi was an example, as I mentioned to you in an earlier occasion. Gandhi did not go to a temple as a pilgrim. He was a strong believer, one of the greatest spiritual persons among the unconventional. I mean, in the sense, he was a politician, political leader, but a spiritual person. So Lord Krishna says, whatever good actions you do, it will be deposited in your bank balance. And then after death, they will go to some higher world, higher level celestial planes. Then they are born again on this earth in the home or in the family of good parents, so that they will be able to continue their spiritual practice in next life. So that is Lord Krishna. That means nothing is lost. Whatever good actions we do, it's not lost. It doesn't depend upon the arbitrary impulse of an uncompromising God who sits above the clouds with a stick in his hand, who judges your spirituality on the criterion of your allegiance to his belief or not. No. You may believe in any religious tradition, or you may not even believe in God. Still, if you do good actions, if you live a good life, if you have good thoughts, good impulses, good attitudes, that will enable you to earn the right to be born in a family, to parents, in a family circumstances where you will be able to continue your spiritual practice. So that means the good actions are transmitted from one life to another life. And he continues, suppose, athava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimadam edadhi durlabhadaram loke janmayadi drisham. So two categories are mentioned here. There are some people who may not have practiced meditation in a very serious manner, may not have practiced renunciation, but still done a lot of good actions, good things for others. Such people will be born in a family which is prosperous, where the parents will naturally help them to continue their spiritual evolution. And there are those who are still more advanced, who have practiced a lot of spiritual wisdom in their life, a lot of austerities they have practiced. They are somewhat advanced. Suppose they also, let's say, they also die before they reach the highest spiritual enlightenment. What happens to them? They will be born in the homes of yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam. They will be born in the houses, the homes of yogis. Yogis here should be understood to mean spiritual, advanced spiritual seekers. Advanced spiritually inclined families, parents, grandparents and others. Because as the good result of the good actions in their previous life practiced with great austerity. They'll be given a chance to evolve further and advance further in their spiritual life. So that's why adhava yoginam eva, if they are still more advanced, what happens, you know? They'll be born in the families of parents who themselves are spiritual seekers. So you find in some traditional families, unfortunately the family structure is collapsing, or it's already collapsed. So frequently, you know, parents give everything to their children, at least when they are young, but they don't give them values. The only purpose of human existence is to succeed and succeed more and still succeed more and finally go and take drugs. Because that kind of success without a spiritual value will not give us the wisdom to handle the benefits of success. But Lord Krishna says those who have done a lot of spiritual practices, they'll be born in families where their own parents will help their children in their spiritual evolution. So that means we can start any day, any time, from anywhere. Nothing is going to be lost. So we build up our own spiritual bank balance. Any time, any day, we can begin a new chapter in our life. That's one of the unique message of Gita. And then Lord Krishna says how this really happens. Tatradam buddhisam yogam labhade pauradekhikam yatadeja tadho buyasam siddhu kurunantana. What happens is, as I mentioned earlier, when we are born again, we are born with a bag. What is this bag? This bag is a set of tendencies, impressions, attitudes, behavior patterns, and so on. We sometimes feel we are inclined to behave in a particular manner. We are inclined to do certain things in a certain manner. And we have a natural tendency to avoid doing things, certain things, natural tendency to do certain good things. So now, where do these tendencies come from? So Lord Krishna says, it is called pauradekhikam. It means it's coming from previous life cycle. Means it is related to the previous psychophysical mechanism. Purvadeha means previous body. So in the previous life, with the previous life cycle, with that body, with that mind, with that intellect, you have accumulated a lot of good samskaras, good impressions. Those good impressions you inherit when you are born again. And then with that bag of good samskaras, where we are born again, if you walk in front of a temple or a church or any place which may be some way, in some way or other linked to spiritual practice, we will have a natural tendency to go and enter. And that could very well be the beginning of a new chapter in our life. That's how inherited tendencies and impressions, what we call vasanas and samskaras, strong attitudes and tendencies that we are born with, will help us in our spiritual progress. And if we have negative samskaras and negative tendencies, negative impressions, they may also could create conflicts in our evolution. So we should go on enriching, reinforcing, we should keep reinforcing this bag of good samskaras, good impressions that we are born with. And once we are born like that, we will naturally, spontaneously, yatateja tato bhuyasam siddhu. From there again you begin your spiritual journey, continue your spiritual journey, till you reach perfection. Now, this idea is more strongly emphasized in the 44th verse, purvabhyasena tenaiva kriyadehi avashopisaka. We have done a lot of good things in the past, so you are helpless. Avasha means you are not within your control. A person who has accumulated a lot of good samskaras, good impressions, will be forced and compelled to do good actions. So it is, please remember, this is the 44th verse. Purvabhyasena tenaiva hridehi avashopisaha jignyasurabhi yogasya sabda brahmadi vartade. On the strength of these previous practices, that person is born with a bundle of good tendencies and impressions, what we call samskaras and vasanas. This may very well be the case of children who show extraordinary skill and aptitude to music, to different skills, because they have practiced this in the previous life cycles. So they perfected these skills in the previous life cycles. So in this life, they find it easier to connect with those skills coming from previous life cycles. So they are able to progress faster. The word is avasha means you can't help doing good actions if you are born with good tendencies. The other way also is true. So there are two ways of looking at this human body. One, this human body helps us to function with the help of good samskaras, good impressions, good tendencies that we have born with, that we have accumulated in the previous life cycles. That's one approach. If you do not remember this, if you look upon this human body just as a physical entity, we all very well know, every professional doctor or a professional nursing professional will know what the human body after all contains. A skin bag inside, there is nothing much to write home about, so to speak. You have to use the sanitizer if you touch anything that comes out of the human body. So the skin bag is not so spectacular when you think of what it contains. But the same skin bag is a wonderful, useful tool in our hands to make progress in spiritual life. So there is an ancient statement of wisdom in Ayurveda, which is also part of a statement in one of our Sanskrit classics. It means, sarira madhyam khalu dharma sadhanam. This body is the most important, the most efficient and the most useful tool in our hands for doing good things. But if you look upon it not as a means but as an end in itself, then we know that there is nothing so spectacular or so extraordinarily wonderful about it. So there are two approaches to human life. One, this human life is a continuation of a journey. It's not limited to one life. Death is only just a comma or a semicolon. It's not a full stop. Once we understand this, it also becomes a great ethical impulse. And Lord Krishna concludes this discourse with the 45th verse. Prayatna yatamanastu yogi samsiddha kilbishaha anega janma samsiddhastado yati paramkati. So a spiritual seeker, the word yogi here means a person who practices spiritual sadhanas, who does spiritual practices. Such a person, he continues his efforts from life to life, from one life cycle to another life cycle. So, two approaches to life and the psychophysical mechanism. On the one hand, this life is a glorious opportunity. It is something wonderful. It is something that helps us to move forward in spiritual life. On the other hand, when we look upon life as a single opportunity, then we should remember it is only a perishable entity which may exist perhaps maybe 100 years. So this is a unique discussion in the Gita. Now when we remember this, we will be able to develop a new approach to life as a whole. It helps us to raise our level of consciousness, our level of understanding of our own life and its meaning and relevance. It's not a negative running away from realities. Rather, it is a positive statement. This body, the psychophysical mechanism, worldly enjoyments, all these things need not be shunned by people living this world. But we should not get crazy about it. That's what Lord Krishna says, because he points out there is something beyond that. Now, there are a few interesting episodes in our mythological books and also devotional classics that will help us to understand the dynamics of this evolution. How this works. I can give one example which is very famous. That's a story of a king or an emperor. So his name was Bharata. He was a very famous king. When he got old, he became too old, he decided to retire from his active life, and he declared his eldest son as the next king, the heir apparent. And in those days, there was a practice in ancient India among Hindus, after active professional life, both husband and wife will retire to some forest hermitage and spend the rest of their lifetime in meditation. So this king, this emperor, Bharata, decided to retire from his active kingly responsibilities and went to a forest. He built a small hut on the banks of a river. And he stayed there every day. He used to go and bathe in the river. He meditated for long hours. And he spent a very peaceful life. He was an aged man at that time. So one day it so happened that a female deer was being chased by a lion. And as the deer just jumped across a little stream, chased by the lion, it gave birth to a baby deer, and in the process, the female deer died, and the little baby deer was floating in the waters. So the king was a very compassionate person. After all, he was engrossed in spiritual practices and meditation. So he jumped into the river and he saved the life of the baby deer. And this little baby deer grew up in the hermitage. Every day when the old man, the old king, came out for a walk, it will go around, walking around, jumping around. So several years passed like that. Finally, it was time for the old man to die. So when he was about to die, one thought came to his mind. Remember, he had left his palace, his kingdom, his own children and grandchildren, because he wanted to retire from active responsibilities and wanted to spend the rest of his lifetime in a hermitage, engaged in spiritual practices, meditation and so on. That king came to be attached to the little baby deer. Means he thought, when I am gone, what will happen to this poor creature? He was a very old man. So he thought, the baby deer was walking around. It thought, it was only maybe just a few months old. It thought its master, the one who protected its life, was going away. So it was sad, it was walking around. So the king, out of his compassion, was deeply worried about the fate of what will happen to this little animal. And he died. Now, in the next life, he was born as a deer. So, in this, when you remember, when you studied this verse, Vasamsi Jirnani Thabikaya, You have to remember, reincarnation frequently is linked to the last thought of the dying person. So when he was dying, his mind was fully focused. He was always thinking about the fate of the deer, the dangers that he may have to encounter in this forest of wild animals. And he died. So he was born as a deer. But the good samskaras that he had accumulated, because he had done a lot of meditation, prayer, he had practiced great renunciation, he had left his kingdom and palace, came to a forest hermitage and stayed there. So it is something very wonderful. So he was a great ascetic. But those good samskaras, those good tendencies did not leave him. When he was born as a deer, he inherited the tendencies and impressions of his previous life. But he also got worried because instead of thinking of God at the last moment, I happened to think exclusively on the deer. He had left his kingdom, his own children and grandchildren, his wife and his all those people had left. And he left all that he practiced the renunciation in order to be able to think of God. But we went and he lived the life of an ascetic. So after several years, when he was dying, instead of thinking of God, he was thinking about a deer. So he was born as a deer. So he should have, he protected the deer, he looked after the little animal, but still he should not have thought himself to be the only protector. So, in spite of all his great spiritual practices, his mind somewhat deviated, but he did not lose his spiritual samskaras which he had accumulated. So he was born again, and that deer spent all his lifetime within the campus of the hermitage. It did not leave the place because it was afraid of coming in contact with other obligations and again losing its focus. So the king was born as a deer. So the deer, when it died, it was born as a great ascetic. So the king who was supposed to meditate at the time of death happened to focus his thoughts on the fate of the little animal, and he was born as an animal. Though it is an animal body of a deer, it had the mind of a great ascetic. So it lived all his lifetime within the canvas of the hermitage. And when that deer died, it was thinking of higher spiritual ideas, thinking of God, meditating on God. And when what happened? When he died, it was born as a great ascetic. So this is the dynamics of reincarnation. So what it shows is we should go on striving to feed our mind with good thoughts, good ideas, good impressions. Now, when we talk about God, we should remember in Vedanta, God means divine reality, present everywhere and in all of us. When we practice compassion, meditation, broad-mindedness, unselfishness, love, and all these spiritual qualities, this inherent divinity, divine spark, will slowly manifest. That's the Vedantic concept of God. So we have the five senses and mind. All will help us to accumulate good samskaras. If we do not employ our mind and the senses to accumulate good tendencies and good impressions, they will invariably accumulate bad tendencies and bad samskaras. There are also other stories, so I shall narrate another interesting incident which demonstrate and illustrate the whole dynamics of what Vedanta is talking about. It's also the story of a devotee. A young man born in a pious family. He was trained to be, he was brought up as a very pious, sattvic type of person, an ideal son, an ideal neighbor. He was very helpful to his neighbors, devoted to his parents, very dutiful. But what happened was, after some years, he fell on bad companies, bad associations. As a result, he was so gullible that he was entrapped by bad friends, bad companions. Bad in the sense they tempted him into doing wrong things like neglecting the parents, ill-treating their parents, his parents, and indulging in violence and so on, and loose lifestyle. So this man, his name was Ajamila. The story comes in Bhagavad Purana, Ajamila Vakhyanam, the story of a devotee called Ajamila. So anyway, the story is like this. When he was about to die, he had already established a reputation as a most notorious criminal in the village. That was his fate when he was very old. So this man was about to die. But very often, if you have done some good actions in your younger days, if you have got some good training, some strong impressions, what you have done is prayer, meditation, good association with people, those good samskaras and tendencies and impressions will always reassert themselves even after several decades. So this man was about to die. And he had a son. The son's name was Narayana. The word Sanskrit Narayana means also is a synonym of God, Vishnu. That is a synonym of God. So he was helpless and he found some he had hallucination of some, he said that devils are coming, threatening him, that kind of fear he had. These are all mythological stories. So anyway, he became frightened, mostly because he was thinking about all the terrible things he did. He ill-treated his parents, he quarreled with his neighbors, and he indulged in so many licentious ways of life. So he became very, 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 very sad and very repentant. But then suddenly he called to his side his son. The son's name was Narayana, which is the synonym of God in Hindu tradition. When he called his name, then he also suddenly remembered that this was the very holy name that he used to repeat with great devotion when he was a young man. So suddenly his mind went back to his early childhood, when he used to engage in spiritual practices, taking the holy name of God. So immediately, it is said, the story tells you that God's angels came and saved him. The story goes. The idea is this: whatever we feed our mind with, that will one day come out as a tendency, as an action, as an attitude. And it will take the form of our interaction with others. So this verse tells you, on the one hand it tells you, this body is a very wonderful instrument. You need a cloth. But you don't use the same cloth all your life. When they get torn, you throw away. Vasamsi jirnani yatha vikaya. Jirnani means when it is torn, when it is too old, then you throw away. So, navani grinnani naroparani. Then what happens? Avarani navani. Then you buy new clothes and you continue your life. But in the process, Vedanta tells you, in every life cycle, though we assume a new body, we do not assume a new mind. The mind is still the old mind. The tendencies and impressions, feelings and attitudes, with which you are born may be modified, may be refined, but they are not altogether new. They are coming from previous life cycles. So these two ideas are strongly portrayed in this well-known verse. We'll continue the discussion in the next session. Thank you. Now we can have interaction. Most welcome. How closely, yeah.
How closely?
Yeah. Yeah. The idea is, I make it clear, you know, we are not born with new senses. If you look upon mind as a sense frequently, then of course it's the same old one. But the eyes, the ears, the different senses of perception that we are born with are all new. But the samskaras and tendencies that we gathered in previous life cycles using the senses of perception of that life, they are still the same, more or less. Closely means Vedanta tells you it is like there is a particular kind of insect. It will leave its present hold only after it gets a strong hold the next step. And Vedanta and other branches of Indian philosophy tell you that frequently there is a kind of concordance. Parents who have done a lot of spiritual practices, they get the benefit of those good spiritual practices by having children of the same good tendencies and impressions. And the souls which have done a lot of, if a person has done a lot of good things in this life, when his body comes to an end, then that soul will go in search of a particular parentage where it can continue its spiritual journey without a break. So there is a degree of closeness. That's the idea behind. So this happens in the form of transcultural, transcontinental, transreligious migrations of souls from a state across large spectrum. You know. So every person can fit into a mold that he has prepared for himself in this life. I know it is difficult to believe when we go deeper and more become more rigid in the analysis. But in a very broad sense, we can say in the same family, there are 5 children, same parentage, same environment, maybe the same school, but they show 5 different characteristics, frequently mutual variance. So how do you explain this? Unless you had to believe that they were all individual pilgrims, individual travelers. So that's the Vedantic approach. Vedanta and Buddhism also will tell you. So in a broad sense, you can come to an understanding of this. But then, if you can see mathematically, you know, everything that you are experiencing in this life, it has preceded in previous life. That is not correct. That frequently, you know, people go to extreme length in interpreting this literally and too precise. That is wrong. That Edgar Cayce was partly responsible for the misunderstanding, you know. So he used to say, if you have done something wrong in this life, then because you are a priestess in ancient Egypt, so you trampled upon a cockroach and it died. So this time you have a big wound on your right leg. So that sort of interpretation you find in Edgar Cayce's. That is, many mansions. That's stretching it too far. Buddhism and Hinduism do not take love karma to those limits. It's a general interpretation, mostly at the psychological level, mental level, tendencies and impressions. That's what, not physical. Physical body is not part of this reincarnation process, according to Hinduism. So, yeah, please continue.
My understanding is that the Japanese Buddhists have a sense of the mind, body, and spirit integrated, and they have a term for it, and they feel that it transcends any individual body and life. That it does seem as though it's a much more expansive idea than the idea of a literal reincarnation.
Yeah.
Of the mind and body into another mind and body.
Even Hinduism also doesn't believe the literal reincarnation, closely following, the astrologers who may do that, but Vedanta doesn't go that far. Yoga, Sankhya, Buddhism, they do not go that far. In Buddhism, for example, when you progress in spiritual life, when you reduce your trishna or desire, which is at the root of rebirth and reincarnation, the Pratitya Samutpada, 12-link chain. The moment you get freed from trishna and desire, then to that extent you get liberated from this process. So reincarnation is not necessarily an inevitable or inflexible, rigid system. It is something that we can get out of. It is something that we can transcend. It is only an explanation of tendencies and impressions and their natural influence on our mind and life. That's all.
Swamiji, how does Vedanta view the idea of free will with this idea of accumulated karma, with the samskaras and vasanas? How do they talk about that?
Vedanta fully understands and attaches a great importance to free will. Free will is there. That's why, by consciously making our own effort, by doing good actions, good thoughts, we can modify our destiny. Now you may ask the question, even our ability to consciously work for our own improvement is linked to karma yoga. And say that's why karma and doctrine of reincarnation should not be interpreted as fatalism. That's going to, it is totally different from fatalism. Fatalism was a system of thought in India. It's called Destinians, it's called in English. There were some schools of Jaina religion, some schools of Charvaka religion who believed in fatalism. It's not so. It is not fatalism. Rather, it is the idea that there is a reason why you behave in a particular manner. Or different individuals behave in different ways under identical circumstances. It's an explanation of this. It doesn't mean they're all automatons, they're part of a machinery or a machine, not at all. It is not that. Every person has a right to, has an ability to improve his own or her own destiny. When we face conflicts, to give an example, suppose we start meditation, we start doing something which we know will benefit us. We have a sincere desire to do, we want to do. But when we try to do, sometimes there is a mental block, mind will have a tendency to drag us backward. That mental block may express as postponement or false justifications, things like that. But we persist, then you find mind will cooperate more and more willingly. At first, you know, mind doesn't cooperate with you when you try to strike a new ground, a new habit or new pattern of life, which you know is very necessary for you. But suppose there's a compulsion and force of circumstances, then we frequently confront the mental block with greater determination, and we're able to do that. See, suppose you have to go to a place, get a new job, there is no other job available, but that place is totally unfamiliar. Still, if there's a compulsion of circumstances, then you are able to actually overcome this mental block. But we may not do that when it comes to meditation and spiritual practices, because it's not so compelling. Not such a...
The idea of like a yoga tapas is really important.
Eh?
Tapas.
So tapas always involves strong will and confronting the negative tendencies and mental blocks. Mental blocks you can find in the autobiographical writings of great mystics like Saint Teresa of Avila. You find many autobiographical writings of many great mystics, Eastern and Western. You find, of course, they always try to interpret as temptation coming from Satan, devil and all that. But Vedanta and yoga, psychology will tell you, it is our own internal mental blocks. So that's what yoga and Vedanta will tell you. And once you take a strong determination, then the mental blocks will be reduced. So mind will start cooperating more and more. The very fact that there is a conflict between what we want to do and what our mind is willing to allow us to do is a proof that there is something in our mental system which is not so willing. And that something could be a bundle of negative samskaras which do not want us to strike a new ground. Yeah.
Swamiji, the question is about spiritual destination or the soul's destination. This talk brought up a lot of issues for me because climbing many mountains, sailing the oceans, the seas, and traveling across the vast lands of this earth, we have a compass. So we know where we're going and our destination. I'm wondering if the soul knows where it's going and it's been there before. Do we have a compass, a psychic compass to guide us towards our destination?
Yeah. No, Vedanta tells you that when you get spiritual enlightenment, it is not a new knowledge. It is something that you discover, discover in your own self. It is not a new attainment. It is not going from one place to another place. It is not something new. We are actually coming back to our own home. Our own home, our own natural place of residence. So that's one of the important arguments in Vedanta. Liberation or moksha is not something, it's not something made by our own effort. It is already there. Even if you say, I'm only a physical body, you cannot become a physical body. You are Atman in your true nature. That's what Vedanta tells you. But if you superimpose upon yourself this wrong idea that you're only the psychophysical mechanism and so on. When you realize your spiritual dimension, it's not a new knowledge. Rather, you are coming back to your own natural identity. So, it is not a destination you reach, that it's a home that you get back to, that you return to. That's the Vedantic concept. It is not we travel from one place to another place. Actually, that's why we dehypnotize. Vivekananda's language is we had to dehypnotize ourselves. Wrongly we hypnotize ourselves into the wrong feeling that we are only the physical body. When I fall sick, the end of everything. I am just this physical body coming and going, coming and going. Once we discover our true identity, then we are out of this. Then reincarnation as a process comes to an end. Reincarnation, this throwing away old clothes and wearing new clothes, you know, Vasamsi Jirnani, this particular verse tells you, that continues only so long as we are not aware of our spiritual identity, the ultimate spiritual identity. Once we become aware of this, then it comes to an end. So reincarnation continues only so long as we are in a state of relative ignorance. We are not yet fully realized our spiritual identity that we are Atman. That's what Vedanta tells you. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.